I'm starting to see what they're actually not seeing in themselves. It's just coming out because they're so identified with it, you know? Mm-hmm. And that shadow's getting projected. You know, their lives are worthless. Their lives are useless. Their lives don't have the truth. Because really, when you're saying you have the truth like that, there's something in the deeper levels of the psyche that's going, that knows that you don't have it all. And it, so it starts to gain an energy, right? That's contrary. It's a compliment, really. You know, the more extreme you are on that side, the more extreme the shadow becomes in a contrasting mm-hmm. position.
Yeah.
But it's not acknowledged in that individual. It's projected. So that sense of there's the dark side, there's the shadow side, there's the inferior side, there's the side that's dark, is over there. It's in you, it's in them, it's in this community. In fact, it's everything outside of their circle. And that's where that shadow gets projected. So I thought, okay, now I'm starting to see this. And no, it doesn't go along with the Christian virtues, you know, of gentleness and kindness and compassion and forgiveness and tolerance and those sorts of, you know, fine qualities. They're more of the qualities of anger and vengefulness and wrath, which really belong to Yahweh. And that is their archetype. Yahweh was a wrathful, vengeful, angry God who demanded not only obedience, but praise. A lot of praise. And if he didn't get it, that got his ire and he delivered severe punishment.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's the archetype that they're really identifying with. There's a problem there.
So that's when you began to, there was not a hostility there, but an uneasiness between you and the elders or the higher ups.
Yeah, with the older men there was tension. I could see the tension building for them, and I knew I could sense it was going to, you know, come out and come my way, because I was going to maintain my own integrity, and I began to question their authority. Now, the 12 tribes say that they're a separate nation. You know, they are creating that separate nation, and it's the 12 tribes of Israel. It's been prophesied and so on, and they're fulfilling that prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So if you look at it like a nation, now you're bringing it into the political field. You know, so what's the political ideology that's going on there? Well, really, when you look at it, and the way I could see it and experience it, it's a very, you know, right wing fascist dictatorship. You know, and if you question the authority of the dictator, right, you're ostracized, you're demonized, you're, you know, marginalized, and you're, you know, character assassination and the rest of it that goes on, you know, in those kinds of ideologies. You know, you're not allowed to question, because there's nothing to question. We have the absolute truth and you don't. So you're either subservient. And so when they say you give up your life, you're not just giving up your life, you're giving up all of it. You're giving up your beliefs, what you feel, you know, in your heart, and you're simply saying, I'm going to adopt, you know, what you're saying, and that's it.
Whoa.
Now I can just bring you to the conclusion of that 2 weeks where it really came down.
Okay.
Well, so it had really built up, and it got to the point where these comments coming out that I were hearing about people's lives just being garbage, I realized, like, there's no way I can't really go here. You know, I can't subscribe to this. There's just no way. You know, as much as I recognize the good things, you know, there's nothing so good that there isn't something bad in it, you know. I was saying to them, you know, I'm going to leave for a while. And I was getting prepared to go, and Shalom was doing a poetry reading, and he asked me to stay an extra day. To go to it. So I did. And that, and you know, Isaac said, so you're staying another day, you know? And I said, yeah, well, Shalom asked me to, you know? So, oh, okay. So I worked that day at their restaurant, and then I was spending the night at their community inn. So I was up in the room and I was reading a book. And the book is a Gnostic treatise that was written by a Benedictine monk. And he had received a manuscript from Carl Jung. Now, so this goes back to the 40s, 1940s. And being, you know, a scholar himself, this monk, he took it very seriously, the theological components of this Gnostic text. Well, I mean, that's where I'm coming from. That's my area of research and interest. So I was reading this book, and Shalom came into the room and looks at me. What are you reading there, you know? Well, I showed him the book, and took a kind of a quick look at the cover and everything, and read the title and gave it back to me, and you know, went out of the room. And 5 minutes later, he came up and he said, Daryl, Isaac and I want to have a talk with you. Oh, okay. So, you know, I put the book down. It's about 10 o'clock at night. And they take me into a room and close all the doors. And I look over at Isaac, and all of a sudden, I'm seeing this man's looking a little different here, you know. He's got a very intense look on his face. He's staring at me, and then, you know, he kind of points the finger over and begins a real tirade on my character for having, you know, defiled the sanctity of that space by reading a satanic book. That really I'm an evil spirit. Comments like it'll be a miracle, you know, an absolute miracle for your soul to be saved. And I'm thinking, wow, it's finally here, you know, this is where I'm going to get the full, you know, the full display of the shadow is coming out. I can see it, and I have enough experience, you know. So I just remained really calm, and I thought, I'm just going to sit here and get the full measure of it, because this is what I've wanted to see and know. It's important. And I tried to explain to him a little bit about the book. And while I got through about one sentence, he said, there's only one book. So there's only one book for them. And not only is it just the one book, it's their interpretation of that book.
Yeah.
It's not just the book, because that book, because of its mythological content, has been subject to many interpretations by many different groups for centuries.
And who knows how many rewritings.
Yeah, and then, you know, all the versions and rewritings, and, you know, they've got the standard American version now. Great, you know, standard American. That really, you know, gives me a lot of hope and faith, right?
Didn't it go right from Sumerian to English?
No.
Okay.
Well, anyway, It was really quite a ferocious display, and I realized what was going on, you know, that here was an autonomous complex. Here was the autonomy, a component of his psyche that had come up and overwhelmed him so that he was out of control, for one thing. It was frothing at the mouth, and just, I mean, the actual facial features really change. You know that this person is seriously, you know, angry. Why? Because I was reading a book that he doesn't, and he's not even letting him know what this book's about. You know, this book's giving a really deep account of where Christianity really came from, and groups of people that really held it, you know, at that time, like the Gnostics. And he's just shutting it down. You know, it's not part of our thing, and you're evil for bringing that in here, you know, and you're doomed. And I realized this is an identity. This is an identification with an archetype that purports to have the power to judge you eternally, where you're going. And this man has taken it on. So when he says we are the body of Yeshua, he's also saying, yeah, but I'm the shepherd of this body. And so, you know, kind of like the Pope, I'm the representative, right? I am the power and the authority. That's actually what's being articulated there. So I realized, okay, we're in a state of serious megalomania. This is a spiritual pride and arrogance that is surely heading for a fall and a catastrophe. I knew that right away. So I calmly got up and I said, well, you know, I'm gonna go. I'm leaving, and, you know, thanks. I'm sorry that if I've offended you, you know, and I'm just going to leave. So I kind of quickly packed up my things, and as I was heading out, Isaac came over, still in a ferocious mood, and here's what he said to me, and this is the one that really, I mean, it gave me a deeper look at this kind of shadow component. He said, and remember, Daryl, if you come back, you're going to hand over the land, the keys to your car, your film, and your rational mind.
Whoa.
I was looking at him like, you obviously, you know, don't know what you're saying.
Yeah.
You know, because if I handed over my rational mind, we'd be in big trouble, you know. We'd be in big trouble. Because it's my rational mind that's keeping, you know, some control on powerful, instinctive, you know, natures here. You know, I could just start trashing everything, you know, because I have no rational mind left. You know, I could kill him for, you know, because it wouldn't matter. I have no conscience because I have no rational mind to analyze
it. No, but they would take your rational mind and implant a new rational mind, right? Like,
he was asking for my will.
Your will.
You know, and so in that sense, psychologically, he's asking for my soul.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people give their souls. You know, when you subscribe to a mythology, in a sense, and a group, you're handing it over. You're giving over your individuality, and you're becoming amorphous into the mass. You know, now all of the lineages that I've been studying and looked at, and the ones that here in North America that I've had experience with, they call it the loss of soul, and that our culture is filled with people who have lost their souls. And they have elaborate and beautiful, you know, rituals for soul retrieval. And that's what they call it. We're going to, you know, we're in here to help you to retrieve your soul.
And we don't have any control over it or what your soul is like. We're just going to help you retrieve your soul.
Exactly.
Right? Like, wow.
Now, psychologically, now from the Jungian perspective, and this is because right now the listeners could be thinking, well, geez, you know, I mean, that's, you know, or people in belief systems would think, maybe ascribe that as being, or describe that as being evil, or even borderline criminal. But I'm saying, no, it's not. It's not evil. It's not criminal, but it's a psychosis. And I would suggest we give the listeners a little break right now, and we'll come back to that part.
Let's give them a break. This is some Slayer. We'll be right back. Welcome back, listeners. That was Slayer. I couldn't believe it when I found that song, but it wasn't a nice, mellow break, but the words were pretty wild in there. This hour of Fan of the Cosmos is brought to you by... Okay, wait a second here. I've got to put these in, so get ready. Here we go.
Holy Smoke Culture Shop is a proud supporter of Kootenai Co-op Radio.
The 15th annual Caslo Jazz Etc. Festival returns to Caslo Bay Park this BC Day long weekend, August 4th to 6th. Opening the festival Friday night is a special performance by Michael Franti and Spearhead, playing a socially conscious infusion of hip-hop, reggae, funk, rock, folk, and poetry. Tickets for the Spearhead performance are $45, available at Packrat Annie's and Sunnyside Naturals, online at www.caslojazzfest.com or call the ticket hotline at 353-7548. Don't miss Michael Franti and Spearhead at the Caslo Jazz Etc. Festival, Friday, August 4th. World around, got you down.
The 7th annual Star Belly Jam East Shore Music Festival returns to Crawford Bay Park this July 22nd and 23rd. See Jane Sibri, Ganja Girl, Adam Shake, Ras Trios, Wasabi Collective, Josh Martinez, the Plaid Tongue Devils, Laura Landsberg, and more. Two full days of multicultural roots music plus a huge interactive kids area. On-site camping available. Weekend tickets $60 advance at Packrat Annie's, Sunnyside Naturals, and various locations on the East Shore. Or $70 at the gate. The Star Belly Jam Music Festival, Saturday, July 22nd and Sunday, July 23rd in Crawford Bay Park.
Welcome back. So, you had the encounter in the room with... There was two people in there, though, right?
That's right.
And you had grabbed your stuff. You're saying, okay... That's it. After this experience, that kind of does it for me. Like, I can't go. And so you were heading out off the grounds with your stuff?
That's correct, yeah.
And Isaac approached you and you had the final
encounter.
What happened with the person, the other person who was in the room, Shalom?
Shalom. He mostly witnessed the whole thing.
Okay, so it wasn't a two-way, like, ming-ong.
No, it wasn't, I mean, I think he said some minor things just to support, you know, what Isaac was saying. I mean, he was in a fully supportive role, of course. He has to be, mm-hmm. you know, with Isaac because he's part of their tribes. You know, yeah. they're in unison in that, on that level. You okay. know, if one of the leaders condemns you, well, they all are.
Yeah.
You know, and otherwise...
It's hierarchical.
Well, it's definitely hierarchical. So the idea that it's all equal is simply false, and it's a deception. It's just not true. You know, it's just, I mean, that's totally my experience, and that's all I can necessarily go on. But I'd like to tell the rest of the story, because this is where I think it really does get interesting. And it also, so yeah, I'll finish this very quickly. After that happened, I thought about it a lot, and I thought about it in terms of the Jungian psychology, and I knew that because of that identification, that personal identification with the archetype, that their health, their actual physical and or psychological health was in great jeopardy. That they were heading for some form of personal disaster in those realms of the physical or psychological health.
Because D-Dan says this, it's a physical indication of an inward situation. That's
exactly.
What D-Dan says.
Well, and that's exactly what it is. So I wrote out what I felt was like a revelation, you know, like an understanding. And I wrote a note to them saying that I'd like to share a revelation that I've had that I think is important for them to hear. And I wanted the rest of the community to be there so that they would understand also why all of a sudden I'm not around. We were yeah. loving and kind to each other. We're having a really good time. All of a sudden, Daryl's out, and they don't know why. And I don't know what's been said to them. I can only imagine, you know. Yeah. And so I said I wanted other members there so that there would be a witnessing, you know, and what I had to share. Well, they wouldn't have the meeting. They didn't want to hear what I had to say or anything or any response or any of my suggestions. So I put it on the back burner, and I thought, well, I guess we'll just see how it plays out. Now, jump ahead. winter goes by, because this was last fall. About a month ago, I was sitting down. I still go to their restaurant. I still consider them my friends. You know, even though they don't maybe consider me their friend, and they don't, I still consider them mine. And I was sitting at the table, and at one of the tables outside, and who comes walking down the steps but Shalom. He was the man that was there, the elder ones in his 60s. And he says, "Daryl," he said, "I'm so glad to see you here." He said, "Could I sit with you?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "You know, I've been away 4 months," and he said, I had to come back here, and you were at the top of my list of people that I just have to talk to.
Wow.
And I said, "Okay, Shalom, like, what do you have to say?
What's up, yeah?"
And so what he ended up telling me, first of all, he really apologized. He said, "Daryl, what happened that night?" He said, "I realize we wronged you. It was wrong what we said to you." And he said, and the reason why I know this, he said, because in the last 4 months, he said, "I went to California after that evening." And he said, "And I ended up getting very sick. My liver got infected." And he said, "I was on the verge of death for quite a long time." And he had some realizations, and he said, "You know, I can't speak for Isaac or anyone else." And he said, "But you know this," and then he described a situation that had happened with another man, you know, where he said, "You know, I told that man things like I did you, how you'd be treated and what you'd be able to do." And he said, "And then the rest of the group went, you know, and kind of directed those people's lives in a completely different way, contrary to what he had said to them." And so he felt like, well, his word was now seriously compromised. And he said, and that person came back to him and said, "Shalom, you said that I would be able to do this and that, and I'm not, and you deceived me." And that man left and said, "Our friendship's over." And Shalom really felt the pain of that. And he realized that the same thing had happened to me. And, you know, I looked him in the eye, and I could see, because of the ordeal he had gone through, it was the ordeal that I was going to share with them the revelation I had. I was saying, "You are heading for a disaster, physically or psychically, you know, and if you could bring it to consciousness, you'll maybe prevent that from happening, you know, and you'll learn something." But his apology was a wonderful thing and a healing thing, and I accepted his apology for sure, you know. Now, what is it? People could think, "Oh, it's just a personal story, and what does it matter to anyone else?" Or, no, there's a great danger in this, in when you've identified with an archetype. And last week I heard Nadeev say, "Well, we're a very nonviolent, we're a peaceful group." Au contraire, this is another deception. Because, listen, when you've given over and you sign over, like Jay has and other people, you know, after 3 days of being in there, all of your possessions and everything else, plus your rational mind and the rest of it that's demanded, right? When you wake up to the fact that it's not all equal, you know, that everything's being foisted on every other lineage, that everyone else, you know, it's when you realize that you have no will left to direct your own life. You know, you can't go down and have a shower if you just want to, or go and visit your family. You know, everything, you have to get permission from the shepherds. You're only a sheep.
Yeah.
Well, what was that all about, equality? You know, where was that? It was like, are we really equal? Or no, it was like, well, no, I said that last week, but this is this week. You know, it's kind of that attitude. We're the authority. It doesn't matter what we say goes, and it doesn't matter. We don't. You know,
don't question it. Don't question it.
You can't question it. It's a fascist. It's in politically, as I say, it's fascist dictatorship. Well, I met a man named Paul who was living in Grand Forks. He joined their tribes, and he's about my age. He went to Winnipeg, and I seen pictures of him holding up placards, you know, cheering on the 12 tribes and "Come and see us, and we're the, you know, we've got it, and we're the truth." And he identified. He fell into the identity. He was, as Jung said, he got the psychic virus, and he gave up his individuality, lost himself to that, which, and they say, well, you've now are part of the chosen and so on, and he's given priesthood, so he's gone into an inflated state now, like, wow, I've got power, you know, I've got authority, I'm part of this group, I can condemn people, and I can save them, maybe.
It's like going to the zoo, kind of, like, gee, yeah. Look at those people in that cage, or look at those people there, like, you're the free, they're the ones who are...
Well, the man had a bit of a rebellious spirit, you know. he was being directed to work in a shop that he felt was really toxic, and he told them that and said he couldn't work in there, and they, you know, basically came out, as he told me, that, you know, you really don't have a voice. You can't say, you know, where you're going to be. You can't question that. They tell you what you're going to do, and you got to do it. You know, like me, you're going to be a vegetarian. You know, you can't be a vegetarian. You're going to eat what we feed you. And I'm saying, well, no, I get ill. Well, no, that doesn't matter, you know. This is the way it goes. You can't. There's no room for any of that. There's no individuality left. You're part of the mass mind there, okay? And all of its shadow components are getting foisted out on the rest of the public. So, you know, this facade of being really friendly to you is very much their collective persona. But behind it, you're not their friend at all. You know,
you're evil.
Well, in fact, yeah. You're an agent of the Fallen One himself. You know, and really, because there's that kind of reversal in it, in their own shadow component. Really, it's not constellating the life of Yahshua. You know, lying and deception and taking people's things. You know, and then when they wake up and are in shock and they go to leave, they're leaving. You know, they're empty handed. I mean. One could almost say that this is a form of theft.
Well, he said you were there for 2 weeks and didn't go in deep. Well, Jay was there for 3 days and he went in deep enough, apparently. You know what I mean, or something.
Well, that's an important thing. Here's the thing. I mean, this is danger. This is dangerous. All right. This is like the wolves in sheepskin. Okay, they're praying, but it's not pray. It's prey. You know. So what happens is people are vulnerable, sensitive people right now, because what's constellated in our collective conscious and unconscious is a very much an apocalyptic archetype.
Yeah,
Bush is on the rampage. The superpowers gone amok. Our constitutional rights, our freedoms. This is a right wing fundamentalist Christian thing running this thing, right? And they're out there to work through, right, the Jewish thing. To get to Islam, because they're playing out the last chapters of Revelation.
Yeah, everything's extreme.
It's very extreme.
Politics,
it's very
extreme war, extreme poverty.
And if you question Bush or anything, the same things happen to you, right? Yeah. So, you know, when someone says, when you're in that state and you feel lost and you're feeling a lot of anxiety about our culture, like sensitive people will, and Jay is a sensitive man.
I feel it.
And you feel it, and I feel it, right? And we know something needs to happen. And a group comes along and says, we have it. We have the meaning that you're looking for. We have the answer. Join us. We'll exalt you. We'll give you, you know, you'll become the voice of Yahshua with us, you know? Wow. You know, I mean, right away, I mean, Jung talks about this. We immediately fall into kind of the infantile state. We've got a new set of parents that are going to look after our problems, right? All we have to do is go along with what's, you know, and there's a great deal of comfort at first in that.
Totally. You don't have to think. You've got your everything set up.
So what's the fallout? Like, what happened with Paul?
Yeah. So anyway, Paul questioned the authority and everything and was, you know, was banished. Because if you question the authority, you know, it's kind of like excommunication, banishment, and, you know, exiled.
And what do they tell you when you're banished?
Well,
like
Paul,
you're going
what Paul
back
told
to
me,
know.
I can only, I wasn't banished because okay. I hadn't joined. You know, so okay. I was never brought into the, as a, you know, I never became part of the chosen and the one set aside, the holy people. So I never experienced real banishment. I was just told that I needed to know if I were going to join them, that I had to give everything over, including, you know, the mind. Anyway, with Paul, this was very much a concern, because when he came back to Nelson and I saw him on Baker Street and I asked him what had happened, and he told me he was in such a distraught state. He said, you know, I'm just rebellious. They're right. I'm damned. I'm going to hell, right? He said, I don't know what to do. I'm so... The man, I could see the look in him. I mean, he was suicidal. There was no question, you know, to me that he felt like his life was absolutely worthless, that the 12 tribes were right, because their collective authority is a collective archetype. It has power. Call it sorcery, call it magic. There's many words for it from every lineage. It has power. Yeah. It's a powerful psychic energy. And when you've given yourself over to it, you're not just easily getting out of it. That's why people have deprogramming centers and deprogramming houses to help people readjust, to find their souls. That's why these lineages and these shamans have soul retrieval, because you're lost now. You're really lost. and your life has no meaning, and you are in deep fear because you are going to the lake of fire forever. And that was the state Paul was in, and I realized, they say that this is nonviolent, that this is peaceful. No, this is an extreme form of violence. This is a violence to the fundamental sanctity of life, to the fundamental divine gift that each one of us has an equal right to, that anyone that I know that has any real spiritual maturity has the utmost respect for. Mm-hmm. And so to deliver that, not only to Paul, but to many, because now there are as many people leaving, that they told me this themselves, there are as many people leaving the tribes as joining. So they've reached a saturation point. They don't believe that, because they believe that a certain number is going to happen. Armageddon then will occur, and then they will be the new rulers. They will be the kingdom of Israel, and those leaders, like Isaac, will be the rulers.
Yeah,
they will, and that's years. Their divine destiny and the authority that they already actually have. It's only to be fulfilled through Armageddon, and then they're inheriting the kingdom of God, their God. All right?
That scares me. That was one of my main things. If you remember last week, I was like, how can, you know, who gets to choose and who's in control of the last times and, you know, like, who will rule the earth? That's the thing.
It's all about ruling, you know, because that state of mind is, it feeds off the power too. A megalomania really is someone who has an inferiority complex. People easily join that have inferiority complexes because, you know, the conscious ego gets a huge inflation. I'm a priest all of a sudden. I have the voice of divinity. I'm backed by this group. We are the body of a divine being, the Son of God. Right? You know, but when you see the actions, the actual violence, the deception, the betrayals, the hypocrisy, I mean, they're bust, they call the hypocrites.
Hypocrites.
Hypocrites. Yeah, the hypocrites from the 60s. It's another projection. See, it's a projection of their own thing. It's their own hypocrisy. You know, really, when you look at that shadow component, it really belongs to Yahweh's first son, who was Satan. Yahweh's first son was Satan. His second son was Christ. Okay? Those were the two antinomies. They're the two separate forces. It was the dissociation of Yahweh himself. Because at one time, they were united in him. He dissociated a part of himself, his own dark self, in the form of Satan. And Satan was banished down into the realms of the world and the feminine, right? And that's what Christianity has attacked from once it became a political body. Exterminate everything that is of that feminine, as of the corporeal world, that is of the mother, because it did not belong to the Trinity. But the complete being is a quaternity, right? It's not just the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. You know, there's the Mother of God too.
Yeah, in these scenes they always refer to the, you know, our Father who art in heaven and our Mother who art on the earth.
Exactly.
You know, like always.
And that's why the scenes and the Gnostics were also exterminated. I'd like to just say, so I've said that much, and all I can say is I hope that Nadiv and Isaac and some of the tribes people may be listening to this, to my talk. The other day, Nadiv, you said to me that when I was trying to explain to you what it was, and you just, you know, told me and overpowered my voice by saying you don't trust me. I've thought about that since then, and I want to say to you, I understand why you don't trust me, because you can't trust that I'm not going to speak the truth. You know, they can't trust that I'm not going to reveal what was done. And I've explained the reasons why now, because vulnerable people in our community are being attracted in, and within 3 days are handing over their whole lives based on really a deception and something that is simply not true.
Well, I in the past week I've had a number of people approach me who, or not approach me, but through friends were talking about it's the friend of a friend thing, but the person who they were talking to couldn't contact me but had like put the word through another person. They don't accept everybody. there's people who want to join, who are genuinely happy and want to join, but if you're not in a certain category of either wealth, completeness, or full, if you're not up to snuff, you don't get in.
Well, exactly, Dustin. And you know, at the same time that Jay and Autumn were joining the tribes,
there was other people who were. Oh, there was another. We're full.
Oh, there was a friend of mine, a woman. Okay, I don't think I'll mention her name because she didn't authorize me to. But she's a mother of a single mom, you know, with her little boy, and she was, you know, really seeking, you know, to find community and needing community. And she went over there right at the same time, and they told her, I mean, well, she's penniless, eh? Them, they told her, well, we don't have room for you, you know. But at the same time, they did have room for Jay.
And Autumn.
And they empowered Jay, you know, within 3 days. It's like, it's kind of a corporate thing, you know. You sign over this and we'll give you that, right? We'll get you to feel really good and powerful again because now you're a priest. You know, in 3 days,
accelerated.
You know, and we can see that you've been able to just give up your all of your former life. I mean, that is simply a delusion. It goes against empirical scientific psychology. You are not going to get over your past life, what you are composed of from the time you were born, your parental influence, your cultural influences, your education, and all of that in 3 days. And to think that you are is simply false. And then for a group to take advantage of that and get someone to sign over after 3 days and then offer them this inflationary grab of power in exchange is a deception and a kind of thievery, which, you know, I think our community needs to be aware of. We need to be on guard for that. We need to protect those sensitive and sensitive individuals that are feeling a little lost in our culture, who are looking for community. They need to know the truth, because like Yeshua said and like Jesus said, the truth will set you free.
Let's go to a quick tune.
Gonna die next, cause the white man's got a God complex. Silent niggas scream for help. Ah, help me, help me. Nigga, make your own hell. Shit, you need it. I turn around and hear the sound of jukeboxes playing in bars. Pimps popped outside in big pretty Cadillac cars. Cleaning in a broke dick dog. Sitting in a big fine hog. Dressed very fine in a mohair silk fine. But Jim Dale died next, cause the white man's got a God complex. Hey, brother, what's your sport, my man? I got just the thing for you. Only cost 10 and 2. What you gonna do, baby? I got black ones, brown ones, red ones, yellow ones. I even got a white one if you wanna buy some. Yeah, that's right. 258, play it straight. I got it all worked out. You know what I'm talking about. Been reading my dream book. Ain't no way in the world a kid gonna get took. Nigga, what you mean I didn't hit? Nigga, you full of shit. Lick dies. Now 7. Come on, be nice and hit 11. Well, what do you know? It's Little Joe. Hey, my man got $20. Say, Little Joe don't blow. Ha, baby needs a pair of shoes. Ha, papa's got the funky blues. Ha, mama plays the crossword in the news. Snake eyes. Sorry, nigga, you lose. The line forms to the real lady. And I don't care if you never cash your welfare checks. Cause the white man's got a God complex. But I got 10 babies, I ain't got no man. I ain't got no choice but to hold out my hand and feed my young ones the best way I can. Hey, man, what you mean no doubles on blackjack? Huh? You better change that rule, cause I ain't no fool. You better be cool, Jim, or you'll die next. Cause the white man's got a God complex. Hey, my man, I want to cop a nickel bag. You say all you got is skag. Wow, that's a drag, cause I don't want to cop no dope is death. Next, cause the white man's got a God complex. Hey, baby, what's the gig at tonight? Well, there's one over at Slick's for
faggots and pricks is one around graveyard side of town that'll cost you a pound. But if you go and know what I know, you better pack your piece at least or you'll die next. Cause the white man's got a God complex. Mr. Stein, I done paid enough rent for this pad to be mine. But you just wanna cheat me cause I ain't your kind. Damn, can't you see the place is falling down? No, you can't dig it cause you ain't never around. Damn, I'm so poor, I don't know what in the hell I'ma do anymore. Not from this day to the next. Cause the white man's got a God complex. I'm making guns,
I'm God,
I'm God. I'm making bombs,
I'm God,
I'm God. I'm making gas,
I'm God.
I'm making freak machines,
I'm God.
Birth control pills,
I'm God.
Kill Indians who discovered him,
I'm God.
Kill Japanese with the A-bomb,
I'm God.
Kill the still killing black people,
I'm God.
Enslaving Earth,
I'm God.
No way to the moon,
I'm God.
I'm God,
I'm God,
I'm God,
I'm God,
I'm God,
I'm God,
I'm God, I'm God, I'm God, I'm God, I'm God.
Spell backwards is dog.
Welcome back. We're just about at the lunchtime of the night. So, I have a letter here from a woman who had an experience and she just wanted to share it. And I didn't ask for people to write in. I didn't ask for all the people to approach me this week. It is just happening. There's a genuine concern in the community. And, as a radio programmer, I've just been called to try and address the concerns of the community. This is one letter from a woman who it was just put in my mail slot. I visited a farm called the 12 Tribes on Highway 3A outside of Nelson, BC over 3 years ago. They showed me around the property, the buildings, and introduced me to everyone there. I was invited to dinner, and afterwards someone talked about his arms being very sore and it was increasing and not going away. From the intense workload they were doing with carpentry, floor refinishing, fence building, etc., I suggest it might be the beginning of tendonitis. A simple bodywork technique of compressing or squeezing the arms muscles and then releasing them during the workday and especially after work might help. So I showed them how to do that for themselves. At least a month later, I ran into one of the men from the 12 Tribes in Nelson and he said the technique had helped. That was good news. About 2 to 3 months later, my wash machine broke down, and I went to the Preserve Seed restaurant that they own and asked if they would like to trade bodywork sessions for cleaning my sheets until my wash machine was fixed. A young woman took my sheets and washed, dried, and folded them. I came back to get them and thought since she had done the work, she would get the bodywork trade. Among themselves, they had decided the man who leads the 12 Tribes would receive the trade. That was their way of organizing things, so I said, fine. I'm on a work schedule and explained we would have to go to my office and start soon, so the full time set aside for this session would be available. The man wanted to ask questions. First about the treatment, so I explained that it was all manual techniques similar to the compression release technique he had found helpful before and that they would be applied only to his arms. He answered by saying something like, how did he know I wasn't working for the devil? I responded by saying that I wasn't out to save his soul, only a few sore muscles, and that my intentions were highly honorable. He added, if he went to the grocery store to buy food and the cashier wasn't a Christian, would he refuse to have her check out his food? His face suddenly changed and became very, very tense and began yelling that I was working for Satan. The loudness and intensity of his voice, an unprovoked attack, was escalating as he repeated the accusation over and over. I began grabbing my sheets to leave immediately as I felt threatened and unsafe. The women were running around him in a hyper-tense and frantic manner trying to calm him down. I left quickly and have not been back since that experience, which set up huge warning bells of tyranny and codependence. It is a long time ago, and I don't remember anyone's specific names. So just an experience of the kind of, you know, being called a devil or Satan for wanting to help heal, and the people running around the elder, it just seems, I can just picture it perfectly
right.
in my mind.
And you know, for them to claim that, that this is the body of the new Messiah, wow. You know, really? It's so contradictory to all the teachings that I know of, you know, the words of Jesus. You know, it's there's simply no correspondence there. You know, so the maxim comes out, you know, do as I say, not as I do. You know, and there's the hypocrisy in it all, you know. And, you know, I think the community should really, I would like to see the community approach it, you know, very cautiously, you know, and have this knowledge. Because a lot of people are coming out, and like that person, Paul, I don't even know if he's still alive. You know, do they have a death on their hands now, or are there other deaths, or are there other people who are so distraught?
Well, next week, I am interviewing a woman who runs a house in Massachusetts, and it's called Outway House, and it's a transition house for people who've left the 12 tribes. And
are they receiving counseling? Or?
They receive counseling, and there's actually like kind of a communal setup for people who've left the 12 tribes to help each other through it.
Oh, that's
and
good.
So
that's necessary.
They also have a network on the internet of chat rooms where 12 tribe ex-members can come together and say, hey, how you doing? And
right.
So I'm going to hopefully interview her next week, and also another person who's been researching the 12 tribes. You have a quote from...
Yeah, I just wanted to finish off with a quote from Carl Jung where he talks about some of the psychology here. And he says, and this is from his book, The Undiscovered Self. Okay. He says, it is just this banding together and the resultant extinction of the individual personality that makes it succumb so readily to a dictator. A million zeros joined together do not, unfortunately, add up to one. Ultimately, everything depends on the quality of the individual, but our fatally short-sighted age thinks only in terms of large numbers and mass organizations, though one would think that the world had seen more than enough of what a well-disciplined mob can do in the hands of a single madman. He's referring to the Second World War that he lived through with Hitler and the Germans. Unfortunately, this realization does not seem to have penetrated very far, and our blindness is extremely dangerous. People go on blithely organizing and believing in the sovereign remedy of mass action, without the least consciousness of the fact that the most powerful organizations can be maintained only by the greatest ruthlessness of their leaders and the cheapest of slogans. They do not appear to have heard of the elementary axiom of mass psychology, that the individual becomes morally and spiritually inferior in the mass. And for this reason, they do not bother themselves over much with their real task of helping the individual to achieve a metanoia, a rebirth of the spirit. And so there it is. Short quote. Anyone who would like to go into it further, pick up some Jung books and depth psychology, and you'll get a good understanding.
Well, I'd like to thank you both for being in the studio. I'm like, this will be my second weekend of having kind of the, you know, at the fair where it goes up the chakras, like the Rucha, ding, 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 tsh, at the top, ding. That's kind of what it's felt like. And even just during the week, it stirred up something in the consciousness of the whole community, because I'm being approached daily by people who have questions, who want to know about certain aspects, who have comments, who have experiences, and we're grappling with it as a community. Like, there are people concerned and people wanting to know, and there's misinformation going about too, and I'm just hoping that these radio shows can help shed light for however you think, just that we, you know, that the truth gets out there from many different angles.
Exactly. You know.
And I thank you for coming in and helping shed light on that and give balance to last week's interview. And yeah, we're a community. We're all trying to work it together in our kind of, sometimes it seems fragmented and kind of crazed existence. There is a unity there because we're all concerned about Jay and Autumn. And that's an indicator of a community that loves its members and it, or can, you know what I mean? Like, we're, if we just said, all right, we'll see. Good. All right, well, they're gone. You know, that would be an indicator of, there's no love there, but we do love each other and we do want the best for our community. And so it's important that we have that awareness, and you're helping that to happen. It's awesome. I'm glad that you took the time to be here.
Yeah, well, it's in the Christian, you know, the Christian question, you know, are we our brother's keeper? And just as you said, you know, when we have a lot of love in this community, and people's friendships are really important. We care about what happens to Jay. You know, if he really fits in there and it's a really, really works for him and he really finds his home, good. That's all good. You know, if it's really working for you, great. But if you wake up, you know, to it and you realize that you're not cut out for that, that you need to be a free man with your own free, the lessons that you need to learn, you know, about your maturing spirituality, I think that when he leaves, they should give him his property back and his money back and so forth. You know, that's the claim that I would like to make. That's the kind of pressure I'd like to see this community put on the 12 Tribes community. All right, take people in. Give them a few months before you take everything from them. Don't do it in 3 days. I don't accept that, and my friends don't accept that. The community that I know of in the Kootenays here, we do not accept that.
A third party trust.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You know, give the man a human being a decent amount of time to make a hard choice like that. Don't pressure him into it. You know, don't coerce him into it and power over him. This is what I would ask of the tribes. Have some patience. Have some sincerity. Have some respect for the human soul.
Yeah, I've been. Yeah, definitely. I've just, it was really kind of made me sad about the people who weren't allowed in or were like kind of given the cold shoulder. That kind of really dampened my spirit on the whole thing, just because I can't help those who genuinely want and are calling out for help. And I think are beautiful individuals who aren't, you know what I mean? Like, they're just people who are reaching out for help. And they do have things to offer, maybe not in the material realms, but getting turned away, it just seems so sad to me. Like, how could, you think Jesus would have turned, or Yahshua, or whoever, whatever name you want to call that being who had so much love, would turn anybody away? No, I don't think so. And so, yeah, that kind of dampened on me.
Thanks for having me on.
Walter,
yeah, and thank you, Dustin, for giving the opportunity for this to be spoken about again.
Well, it's good to have your spirit in here. You know, it's like grounding and good. And
all right.
I feel blessed. All right. Have a good night, folks, and stay tuned for next week when we continue this. I guess it's, we're just exploring the 12 tribes from many different angles. And stay tuned for next week. Love you all. Have a great week. And this week is solstice, and that's on Friday. And that will be the longest day there is and the shortest night. And it's a good time to make like a seasonal indicator of a spiritual indication too. So take care. Love you. Have a good week. Bye.
Something that many of you, if you're not up on and don't know anything about, it's going to be riveting. I guarantee you won't forget about it. You're going to look at the world a lot differently now. We are sitting, of course, riding the crest of an explosion of technology that is almost beyond belief. And it is invading our lives in ways that many of you, unless you know about RFID and spy chips, wouldn't even dream about. And we're just on the beginning of this whole revolution of utter control, utter monitoring, and utter invasion of our once sanctified privacy. It's gone now. Just about gone. But Catherine Albrecht has devoted her life and many years now to fighting for all of us, you and I, to try at least to stem the tide as much as she and those who support her can, and I include myself in that group, from this incredible, overwhelming domination which those who seek to run the world are pressing upon us every day. So let's say hello again to Catherine RFID Albrecht.
Hi, Jeff. It's good to be on.
I should say, Catherine, no thanks, RFID.
Yeah, you put the anti in there, yeah. Well, you know, Jeff, we have a new tool to get the word out into everybody's hands.
We have nuclear weapons now, do we?
Well, we've got the nuclear weapon to fight against RFID, and it's the new book that my co-author Liz McIntyre and I have authored.
This is great.
Information in there. I mean, you know, I start talking about this stuff, and I sound completely nuts. I mean, the idea that tiny computer chips hooked up to miniature antennas can be flipped between the layers of the soles of a pair of shoes or sewn into my clothing and be transmitting information at a distance, I mean, it sounds absolutely crazy. And of course, anyone who's been following this issue, and of course your listeners and the people who follow the news on your website, know that, you know, this is something that's been going on for years now, that they've been planning this since 1999.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's the biggest corporations on the globe. You've got, you know, Walmart, Procter & Gamble, Gillette, Kraft, Nestle, Department of Defense, U.S. Postal Service. You've got all the big players on board.
And the U.S. military.
Absolutely. And yet somehow we've got the majority of the public completely in the dark about this.
Yeah, well, no accident.
Well, so what we've done, we spent, after I've spent 3 years of my life researching this, and mm-hmm. of course, you know, launching boycotts and protesting and fighting against these guys, I finally said, you know, they're getting ahead of us. We need the real weapon. And so Liz and I took 7 months out of our lives, 7 months out of our protesting schedule, and we buckled down and we wrote an absolutely amazing book.
So that's what happened to you.
That's where we went, yeah. We went underground and created. You know what I think about? Somebody said, well, the anti-RFID movement has petered out. And I thought, no, it is just beginning. You wait and see. We are just getting started.
Okay, tell me more now. The book is called Spy Chips: How Major Corporations and Government Plan to Track Your Every Move with RFID. Go ahead.
The real key here is people are going to learn about this.
Yeah.
And the page, you know, that we're going to turn a page of people's knowledge.
Well, I didn't expect HarperCollins to publish it, but you got a heavyweight, and you're there.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's incredible. And they've been absolutely supportive. They did not edit a word out of this book. And that's the other thing that we just felt so... I mean, we nail a lot of big corporations, and that's what I want to be talking about in this hour as we visit together, is about how IBM, you know, we found these scandalous plans by IBM, horrible plans by Procter & Gamble, plans
right.
by big companies, and yet this publishing house had the courage to stand up and say, you can publish that. You can tell that to the world. And I somehow think that some of those other publishing houses with their deep and profitable ties with... with other areas of industry would
right.
probably have wanted to tone us down a little.
Well, they have probably, a lot of them are planning on putting chips in their books. So
that's we actually talk about that in the book.
Yeah.
We talk about plans.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to be a Christian to find it creepy, but as a Christian myself, I have to say that there's, you know, another piece to this, which, and you hit the nail on the head. We're published by a division of Thomas